The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Consider yourself a home dreamer? One who watches the renovation programs on television? Are you just waiting for the right time to build or renovate your dream home? Welcome to Winning the Dream Home Race with Steve Clip Architect. Steve has spent 3 decades learning how to win at the dream home game. He has insights into the psychology of space that could strengthen your marriage and soothe your soul. He has an understanding of market forces and the methodologies of construction that could save you thousands of dollars, and he could make you a winner. Now, here's Steve Clip.
Hi, people. Welcome back. Well, today I have my first guest. First time I've tried this. His name is George Smart. He is the executive director and founder of Triangle Modernist Houses. And this is a nonprofit organization dedicated to the preservation and documentation of especially the mid-century modern houses that are so abundant here in the Research Triangle area of North Carolina. And in a past show, I've talked to you about the different styles of architecture and how you can identify them and what the character and history of the different styles are. I stopped when I got to modern architecture because we ran out of time, but more so because I know a bit about it, but we have right here an expert. And so I'm going to turn it over to George Smart. And George, my first question is, can you give us a history of the modern style? What is the modern style, and you know, what are its characteristics?
Well, good morning, Stephen. Thank you for having me on the show. It's really nice to be here and be your first guest. So let's talk about modern or modernist architecture. A modernist architecture really came to us through a variety of influences, a lot of them in Europe in the 20s and 30s. And had its heyday in the 50s and 60s, which is why it's become to be known in many circles as mid-century modern, and then went into a decline in the 70s for a variety of reasons. And now this style is coming back in various places around the country, including our own area, the Research Triangle area of North Carolina, which includes Raleigh, Durham, and Chapel Hill. Most people don't know that the Triangle is the third largest concentration of residential modernist architecture in the country. It's something that I discovered 5 years ago in starting our website, TriangleModernistHouses.com, and where we as an organization have concentrated our mission of documenting the houses across North Carolina, and there are about 1,200 modernist houses here, and then about another 2,800 houses across the country by some of the architects that are more well-known, Frank Lloyd Wright, Richard Neutra, Charles Guathme, Richard Meyer, just to name a few.
And this got started that back in the late 1940s, early 1950s, surprisingly, NC State University decided to create a school of architecture, school of design, and hired Camp Hefner as his first dean. He was very successful at getting some of the best and the brightest architects in the country to come here as faculty. The best known, I think, is Buckminster Fuller was here for a while. And the future deans of both the Harvard and Yale schools of architecture. But during the 1950s and 60s, NC State University School of Design was probably the top architecture school in the world. And naturally, when you get a lot of top architects in an area, you get the products of their work. All these guys were faculty, but they worked on the side designing homes. And George, was it your dad trained there?
And yeah, I am not an architect by profession. I get all my interests somehow through my DNA sequences. This has just emerged from me in the last 5 years. My dad was an architect for about 40 years. I did principally schools and churches and other kinds of commercial buildings. So I grew up in this business, although it's not my particular profession.
No, I was surprised. You're actually an executive. You coach CEOs of corporations.
Yes.
And which is an amazing thing in profession in itself. But back to modernist homes and mid-century modern. What are the characteristics of these mid-century modern homes that, you know, that you're trying to preserve?
Well, most communities, particularly around the cities in North Carolina, have a couple of houses that everyone in town refers to as that house. It's usually something quite unusual looking. And typically, 9 times out of 10, that house is going to be a modernist house. Modernist houses have a tendency to look very futuristic, not quite the extent of the old cartoon series The Jetsons, although many of these houses have been nicknamed the Jetson House over various years. Modernist houses tend to have 4 characteristics which separate them from the rest of the building stock. Number one is they tend to have flat or low-pitched roofs with the absence of an attic. Number two, they tend to have unusual geometries so that the shapes are more than just a rectangle with windows planted in the side. Next, they tend to have an unusual amount of glass and use of natural light coming in through windows or skylights or through the positioning of different atriums or other features to connect the person on the inside with what's going on around them in nature. And then finally, the use of open space planning. In the 20s, if you had a typical mill house, for example, you'd have a lot of tiny little rooms, each with a very specific purpose. A bedroom, a small bathroom, perhaps. If you were lucky, you would have a small closet. The kitchen and the living room and the dining room and the pantry would all be separate small rooms. In modernist houses, these rooms tend to be combined or flow together. In some modernist houses, there really are no walls between rooms. They are just doorways or hallways, which gives it a much more open feel and a more open vibe. And it is this vibe that most owners talk about when they reveal why they love modernist architecture. The houses are just more relaxing to live in. People look much more forward to coming home to a modernist house than they do to a typical sort of stick-built development house. These houses are much loved by the people that are in them. Many times people who buy a modernist house, or particularly who commission one from scratch, tend to stay in them for 20, 30, 40, 50 years, unless some change in their life forces them to move out, perhaps a job change or a change in health. Modernist design gave way in the 1970s to what's now known as the contemporary style. You saw a greater reduction in windows. You saw the use of flat roofs go away because people got scared of them during the 50s and 60s. Probably 20 or 30% of the modernist houses had roof leakage problems with the flat roofs. And this was because material science had not quite caught up yet with architecture. So architects were designing homes that in small part really couldn't be built properly given the state of material science. Since about the 1980s, material science has far eclipsed really what architecture is able to come up with. So we don't have those same problems anymore. There's no more reason to be afraid of a flat-roofed house unless it's one perhaps from the 50s that hasn't been fixed up in a while.
And how many of, I think of modernist as both the architect designed premier house, and we've seen those in there compared to today's premier houses, typically they've been smaller. They may be 3,500 square feet, but they're designed as show houses by people with money.
Yes.
The other area that I think of as modernist houses is after World War II and the housing boom that came during the 1950s, people wanted to look ahead. They, you know, wanted to shake off the old traditions, the old ways of thinking. And as you said, in the house, this is one of the ways to do it. So you had the Levittowns, and you had, you know, large production builders, and maybe not large by today's standards, but doing modern houses for modern people. And they were typically 1,400 square feet, and often for families and, you know, young families starting out. When you look at preserving these houses and restoring them, what percentage of them are these kind of houses for starter houses versus the what I think of as the star houses?
Sure. Well, that's a good distinction. The post-war boom in housing was really the genesis of what's now known as the ranch house, which was typically a one-story, 1,500 square foot or so home, often with a carport on the side. As more people were buying automobiles as well as buying houses. Now, this was a separate movement, although related, to the modernist house, which had those characteristics that we talked about earlier. Ranch houses tended to have the standard sort of pitch roof. They had attics. The windows were not particularly abundant or large in these homes, but they were easy to build. They were affordable. They had some of the more modern conveniences that were coming along at the time, like dishwashers, for instance. And because of the need for housing from returning GIs, there was a huge market for these. On the modernist side, there were a few communities that were set up. Eichler is a well-known modernist architect who did a number of modernist ranch-type houses around the country. We have a few of those here in North Carolina. And then on the high end, L.A., which is the number one area for modernist houses in the country, began to be very attractive for people to build quite expensive, quite large at the time, and large was 2,000 to 3,000 to 4,000 feet modernist houses. And these were done by architects such as Frank Lloyd Wright and Rudolf Schindler and Richard Neutra, who throughout the 40s and the 50s particularly, were turning out hundreds of these houses in mostly the Los Angeles area. In this area, in North Carolina, Camp Hefner's faculty was not only encouraged, but almost required to have private practices on the side. Dean Camp Hefner felt that the faculty would be much more robust and much more current if they were also having to be involved with real clients and real builders and real design situations as well as teaching them. So,
and really figure out how to keep the water out.
Right. Keep the water out and build these things at a reasonable cost and solve the basic design problems like how do you site a house to accomplish goals such as what we would now call green, But back then it was just called something as simple as having great sunlight. These houses tended to be ahead of their time in a number of ways, and one of those was that in some ways they were more energy efficient than traditional houses.
Well, they did use a lot more glass, and with the caveat being that at that time the glass was single pane.
Yes.
And so when you look into restoring one of these houses or renovating it, you know, that's one of the things that immediately comes to mind is if it's an original house, you've got all of this single pane glass and just simply replacing it all is quite a cost.
Yes, and fortunately, because of the technological advances, replacing all the windows is not as difficult or in some cases as expensive as it used to be. And there's a much better return on investment now because of the reduced energy cost through double pane, other kinds of insulated glasses that are available. So when people are considering renovating a house, definitely glass is one of the things that come up. And also in terms of looking at the insulation of the house, many of these houses were insulated with standard fiberglass. Now there are technologies that can be done sometimes on a retrofitting basis, such as foam insulation or other kinds of types that can really tighten up on your home energy budget and reduce those costs for a family.
Okay, we'll go to a break in a couple of minutes, and after that we'll talk about, you know, what if you decide to actually buy one of these houses and take on the project of renovating it or restoring it. Before we go, I'm trying to think, how many of these houses, it seems as though there were lots of ranch houses built, but the truly modernist house, that they were only done in a small quantity. And you've described 1,200 in this area.
In North Carolina, yes.
In North Carolina. Are they available? I mean, I know, well, talk about how you would find one of these.
Yes. We have an area on the website, trianglemodernisthouses.com. If you click on the for sale button, we have between 50 and 80 houses listed that are for sale. We're not realtors. We don't get any money off of this. We're a nonprofit organization. But one of the needs that we fulfill is letting people know that modernist houses are available for sale. The vast majority of realtor multiple listing systems in the country have no distinction between contemporary houses, which are plentiful, and modernist houses, which are pretty rare. So for 5 years, one of the services we have offered is this exclusive listing of just modernist houses, which range anywhere in price between about $85,000 on the low side to a couple of million on the high side.
And, okay, you just mentioned it. Well, we're going to go to the break now, but I'm really curious, what is the difference between a contemporary house and the modernist? You talked about the flat roof, the extensive use of glass. To me, the modernist is far more a purity of form than the contemporary. The contemporary is playful and meant to be kind of shocking, I think, in some ways. But it doesn't have a purity of form. And that's what I see in the modernist. When we come back from break, let's talk about some ideas about how to get started on your modernist house.
That's great.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now.
Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America.
Each week, Jimmy Gould brings you the stories and the people that you want to hear about. Tune in to A Current Life to hear about the journey to success, how our guests became the people they are today, and the highs and lows they experienced along the way. Each hour will leave you inspired and entertained as Jimmy gets up close and personal with every week's guest and shares ideas you can identify with and apply to your own life. A Current Life with Jimmy Gould airs Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned into Winning the Dream Home Race with your host, Steve Klipp. We'd love to hear from you about our program. Call in to 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to clipark@yahoo.com. That's C-L-I-P-P-A-R-C-H at yahoo.com. Now, back to winning the dream home race.
You know, there's a... If you're interested in a modernist house, there are really two directions to go. One is to find an existing modernist house from the 1950s or the 1960s or even the 70s and renovate it. The other is to build from scratch. And you can today, in truth, modernist is a historical style. Now, the same as other historical styles and completely applicable to today. So you can build one today. But the first choice, I think, for many people who are interested in the modernist is to find an existing house and renovate it. I've talked in the past about the big advantages of renovating the existing house. One of the biggest is the fact that you're in an established neighborhood. Typically, if you're buying the house that was built in the 1950s, you're close into town. The neighborhood is well built out. The trees are large and the landscaping is lush. And it's just a more convenient, easier place to live. So, George, can you tell us a few stories about people who found that existing modernist house and taken on the project?
Sure. Many people are looking through our website at trianglemodernisthouses.com to find available modernist houses on the market. And again, they are anywhere from 85 or 90,000 to up to a couple of million. Typically, people find something between the $200,000 and $400,000 range. A number of those are move-in ready, but a number of other ones need some work. And that's where they have to start making decisions based on what their preferences are as a family and also
now,
what their...
Just to interrupt you, from what I've seen, the biggest determining factor about the cost of an existing modernist home is the neighborhood and the land values. And
yes,
this is, as in any, I talked last week about renovating the truly old home. As in any house, the location is so much of the value, and you can find a great modernist house in a questionable location for a cheap price.
Yes.
Or you can find yourself paying a really high price for what is, in essence, the value of the lot.
Yes.
And the house just sits on it.
Yes, definitely location is a part of people's decisions. And once they've decided on a house, let's say they've got to the point where they've already bought something, Now they have to start looking into, well, which direction do we want to go as far as fixing this place up? Do we want to try to restore it to its original elegance when it was built, say in the 50s or 60s? Do we want to make it very modern so it looks like a 2012 house? Or do we want to do something in between? And I don't really have an opinion on which way people should go with that. I think that it is very useful at this point to get the services of an architect, because they can help owners avoid some sometimes very horrible mistakes that get made when renovations are done on their own. For instance, there is a tremendous house by George Matsumoto, who was one of Henry Kamphefner's original faculty in 1948. George is, I think, going to be turning in his early 90s soon. He's still around, still doing great, but he's one of the last surviving members of that original faculty. And there's a house of his in the area that is loaded with cherry and mahogany wood fixtures throughout the house, closets and shelving and some original furniture. And the owners came in and decided, without consulting anybody, that this cherry and mahogany wood was just too dark. So they went to Sears and bought white paint and painted it over. And you just want to cry when you go through the house and see it. It is brighter, that's for sure, but all those gorgeous 60-year-old natural woods are gone.
That is, yes, you can. I actually think it is harder to do a good renovation of a house or extension than it is just to build a new house.
Many times it is.
It takes real thought. Can you think of one where, you know, when you do one of these houses, I think we've looked at it as just like the truly old house, is that you know you're going to be fixing the roof if it hasn't been fixed. You know you're going to be putting in new windows, new heating and air conditioning system. What's sometimes works is that the plumbing is only 50 years old. Mm-hmm. And so you may not have to replace the plumbing. Well, you replace all the fixtures and finishes, but not the guts. And if you're lucky, the electrical system is viable.
Yes.
And doesn't need work. What do you find, what are the basics that you find that need to be done for what these modernist houses?
Well, almost always, people want to upgrade the bathrooms and the kitchens. There are a couple of good examples in the area. For instance, Ellen Cassily, an architect in Durham, renovated a very nice mid-century modern ranch in Hope Valley, finished up about a year or two ago. It was originally owned by the Coonrad family, who got the house design from a magazine and had it built. And as part of that renovation, they kept the basic structure of the house, which was a very long kind of roughly L-shaped house, but put in a state-of-the-art type kitchen using the color scheme that matched some of the original fixtures that were in the house, changed some of the walls around to open up the house a little bit better, and changed some of the landscaping in the back so that the space in the corner of the L, if you will, was much more amenable to having events on the outdoors. That was quite a successful renovation just recently. A few years back, Dale Dixon, who is an architect in Chapel Hill, did the renovation of the Mercer House in Raleigh, which I believe was originally a great modernist house by Carter Williams. And that house took what was a couple of small rooms, a very small living room and a dining room, and took down the wall in between and just brilliantly opened up the back and allowed the implementation of much larger windows So the house has gone from being a very interesting but not spectacular house to a house that is now just thrilling to walk through. It was one of the most popular ones on our tour about 3 years ago. And then finally, there's a firm in Raleigh called In Situ, Aaron Sterling Lewis and Matt Griffith, who recently renovated a deck house. Deck is a company that is known to many people who follow modernists. It was a company that put together plans for modernist houses in the 60s that were very progressive, very well built, very sort of heavy houses. They had lots of attention, big beams, open plans. There are probably about 40 of them in the Triangle area. And Aaron and Matt renovated one, which was recently on the AIA Triangle Tour, and did a great job of taking the deck concept, which is quite modern to begin with, and extending that, making some additional living areas for the family, and extending that firm's philosophy of making modernism affordable. Aaron and Matt have a niche in this area of being able to create nice, small, modernist houses in the area of about $130 to $150 a square foot. So modernism doesn't have to be expensive. You can certainly trick out a house if you want and spend hundreds of thousands or millions on it, but it's just not necessary. And if your dream is to have a modernist house, you can definitely have one.
Well, I've looked at, you mentioned a deck house, and I've actually worked on a couple of deck house renovations. The primary, they had very, although the roofs were sloping, they were very low slope, as in 2 to 3 in 12 pitch. And everything was engineered to be as minimalist as possible. So the beams were as small as they could be with, you know, no fudge factor. It was a very taut, tight skin, an engineered home, which makes it very hard to renovate. First off, you have to look at it and understand the character. And the deck house has a specific character. It's almost like being in a tent. It is so taut and minimalist. At the same time, one of the, you know, real questions that came up is the two houses that I can think of that I renovated, the ducts for the heating and air conditioning actually had been buried in the ground underneath the concrete slab.
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine that over the years, those ducts deteriorated, and they were basically blowing the heating and air conditioning through earthen ducts in direct contact with the earth.
Yes.
Not the greatest situation. But the really, really tough question is, if you've got no attic, if you've got no concealed spaces, how do you put new heating and air conditioning into that house? And we have, it's, I believe with the deck house that you really have to understand the character, and this is probably true of most modernists, is the character is so strong that if you fight it, you know, either you have to be right in sympathy with it or you find yourself fighting it. And
right.
George, the house you pointed out that was on the AIA tour, the deck house character with his slightly sloping roofs, I felt actually the addition, which was a pure flat roof and straight line box, was slightly fighting the character of the original house. And the, you know, I think that's, the deck houses are just really tough nuts to crack, and what to do with them.
They are. The houses that were produced by a central entity, Eichler Homes, the deck houses, acorn houses, empyrean houses, and lustron, for instance. If you're going to buy one of these and work on it, it's helpful to find people who at least have had some experience that can give you some advice on the houses. In the local area, Bob Bacon built the majority of the deck houses in this area. He's since retired, but is a great guy, and I talk to him quite frequently, as a matter of fact. And he's a great go-to person to get some insight on how to tackle one of these things, because they are quite specific.
They are, and it's, and this is the basic decision that I talked to with someone when I'm approaching one of those houses. And Chapel Hill actually has quite a few of them.
Yes.
The is, do you love the character of this house? And are we simply enhancing the character of it? Or are we going to change it? Because it really comes down to either you are going to enhance the character, or you're going to remake it into something new and something that is perhaps less on the edge. You know, I talked about the deck house as being living in a tent, and I love that.
Mm.
Today, we can do it quite well and match that character only with double pane glass and, well, actually, that was one of the few real problems with them, is the single pane glass. And otherwise, they're beautiful houses to live in.
They really are. I mean, that's the thing that most people don't get until they go inside one. I mean, you have to understand that modernist houses are an incredibly small niche of the housing market. In the Triangle, and we're the third largest grouping of these in the country, it's only about 1/4 of 1% of the housing stock are modernist. So that means 99.75% are not. And many people, to be honest, don't like modernist houses. They think they're weird. They think they don't fit in with the neighborhoods that they're in. Most people have never been inside a modernist house, or much less lived in one or spent the night in one. So as part of our mission to preserve these houses, we run house tours. We've run about 32 or 33 house tours so far, with going on 10,000 people having gone in attendance. And this gives people a chance to talk with the owners, to actually experience the house more firsthand, to ask questions, and to start connecting some of the dots about living their particular dream. Now, to go on a point you talked about earlier, modernist house living does tend to come with a couple of requirements. Now, most Americans, including myself, until I moved into a modernist house recently, I mean, our houses often look like a Cracker Barrel exploded on the inside. There's just stuff everywhere. There's pictures on every square foot of the wall and knickknacks on every counter and all that kind of stuff. Modernist living tends to be more a clean look, just like the architecture is much less adorned. When you're inside a modernist house, you don't tend to have all that stuff everywhere. And so when we moved, we had to really look at some decisions about getting rid of stuff, and we were quite nervous about that. And as it turned out, it was a terrific experience. We, like many people, haul around crap for years or decades that we don't like and we're not going to use, and we just keep moving it from place to place. So our move allowed us a great purge of things, and we're much more satisfied when moving into our new modernist house of having divested all that stuff.
Well, I have a belief. I mean, a problem I have with a lot of contemporary houses and modernist is the stripped-down look.
Mm-hmm.
I actually love the idea of either clean spaces, which is modern, clean spaces with antiques. I mean, the contrast.
Yes.
Of an oriental rug and a comfortable but old sofa with this clean space, to me, is you have to look for comfort in life. It's hard enough. And I think even, I'll tell you, George, it's this dichotomy or contrast. It is, and I'm at the point in my life where I want to get rid of nearly everything.
Yes.
And however, but I want to retain comfort. And I think that's the key between the two for me, is how can you achieve both? And
yes,
when we come back from break, let's talk about doing the new modernist house.
Okay.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Ever wondered what private investigators really do and how they go about solving cases? Each week, PIs Declassified gives a glimpse into this little-known world. Join your host, Francie Kaler, a noted private investigator, in conversations with detectives and experts in the field. False confessions, forensic evidence, finding missing persons, exposing fraud, exonerating the innocent. All areas that Francie and her guests will cover. And have they got stories to tell? Tune in and call in to the live show Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
Tune into Goddard Design every week for everything that is arts, interior design, and architecture. Host Chris Goddard will help you explore and invite creativity into your life. Our guests will include industry leaders and insiders who take you through the entire world of design and its many facets. You may not be immediately aware, but design is involved in nearly everything we do, from homes to clothing to food and drink. Tune into Goddard Design every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned into Winning the Dream Home Race with your host, Steve Klipp. We'd love to hear from you about our program. Call in to 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to clipparch@yahoo.com. That's clipparch@yahoo.com. Now, back to Winning the Dream Home Race.
So what if you really like the idea of modernist? You like the clean lines, the crisp outside appearance, the open walls of glass on the inside, the combining of rooms and the openness and flow of space. One of the interesting concepts there is that I think you can take the house that with boxy shut-off rooms is 3,000 square feet. And I really believe if you combine spaces and you open things up, you can probably achieve the same balance of living and enjoyment of space in 2,2400 square feet. So, George, I know a lot of people talk to you about, is it possible to build a modernist house today and what that would look like?
And the answer is absolutely yes. And people also ask, well, why should I hire an architect? Because the architect is just going to make the house more expensive. And actually, the value of the architect will be in saving you money. People are surprised to discover what an architect really adds besides just drawing the house is experience in how to actually make the space more functional, more livable, and more enjoyable for the people that are inside it. For instance, you can go to one of the large sort of builders in the area who have their own designers on staff, and buy a 3,000 square foot house and pay X amount of money for it and be done in 120 days. Or you can hire an architect who will get you a house that lives like 3,000 square feet, but may only actually be about 2,200, 2,300 square feet because it's so well designed. You're going to come out ahead even after paying an architect because of that reduction in square foot cost and be a lot more pleased with the final outcome because A, it will have been customized more for you, and B, you will have tapped into the years or decades of training that the architect has in really making a space vivid for the owners, relaxing to match where they are in their lives, be that the stage of young kids or teenagers or empty nesters or newlyweds, and or people that like to do things like have family events a lot or do a lot of entertaining, things like that. My wife and I have a house that is about 2,400 square feet, but it consistently lives like it's about 3,000 or 3,200. It's a two-year-old modernist house, and we just couldn't be thrilled with it. It's a great house.
It's a two-year-old. How would you describe it as modernist? What makes it modernist?
It has those characteristics we discussed earlier. It has a flat roof on about half of it and a very low-pitched roof on the other side. It has a long 40-foot section of clear story windows, which illuminate the house as long as the sun is out shining. We don't have to have a single light on in the entire house unless we want to during the daytime. The back of the house is almost all insulated glass, which faces Parkwood Lake in Durham. And the rooms are set up as such to where, with a couple of exceptions, there are really two large spaces that the entire house is designed around. There is an enormous living room, dining room, kitchen area, which will easily hold probably 100, 120 people when we want to entertain. And then there's a bedroom area, which also has a little gym next to it, where we spend a lot of our evening time. When my organization has fundraisers for Triangle Modernist Houses, we often have them there in our house because it lends itself to entertaining as well as daily living.
And this is a great example of what you're talking about.
Right, right.
You were talking about this is an offshoot. You're talking about the use of an architect. Mm-hmm. And I've talked a lot about where the real money is in construction and the negotiating power. You know, knowledge is power. And when there's just the owner and the contractor has all the knowledge. He has all the power. That can swing easily 10 to 20% the final cost of the house. When you hire an architect, the knowledge balance, it comes back into balance, and the most likely, ideally, that you will actually spend less money even paying the architect's fee because you're in a much more knowledgeable position about what things cost, whether you should or shouldn't purchase that item, and you can weigh the value of both, whether you should purchase it, whether it's worth the money, and what that money should be. So I would argue that you should come out spending less money with an architect than the exact same product built without an architect involved.
One of the questions I get most frequently through the website is people asking for recommendations about architects because they assume that that's the hard decision. And actually, particularly in the Triangle area, we have lots of very, very talented architects who are quite capable of designing modernist houses at all price levels. The difficult decision is not picking the right architect, although there's some element to that. It's finding the right contractor. Many contractors will say they can build a modernist house, but very few have actual experience in doing so. The whole nature of modernist building is different from the conventional stick-built house. The subcontractors are different. The skill sets are different. The materials are often radically different than a conventional house. So you want to make sure that you've made a good choice about the contractor and that they have plenty of experience in doing modern.
And then the contractor has to have a sense of adventure.
Yes.
If the guy is just simply putting widgets in place and he can cover up, you know, he can doesn't need that much skill because he can cover everything up, that's the traditional house, and that's a different mindset. The guy who enjoys challenges, who enjoys working with new materials, and who comes to the job site wanting to think, that's the person that you need.
Right. And in this area, we have a number of firms. There are about six or seven that are very well experienced in doing modern. And then we have a third category of companies that are design-build firms. These are typically architect-led firms that do the architecture and also do the construction. So that's interesting for people and often a practical step. We did that with my wife and our house, in that there is no middleman between the architect and the contractor. They're the same person. So they can be designing the house that they know how to build. And for a number of people, that is a very innovative way to go on a house process. There are about four or five design-build firms in the area that do that kind of work, and that's a third way of looking at it as well. I think.
I look at that, and I think we've talked about it. I believe that the skill set of an architect and the skill set of a contractor are so different that it's hard to be good at both.
It
Although
is.
A partnership that has a contractor and an architect can be good at both.
Partnerships are abound in this area, but also design build has really evolved over about the last decade, and there are a number of individuals in this area who are just quite talented and have skills at both the design and the construction.
Mm-hmm. And I've done two. You talked about, can you build a modernist house on a budget?
Yes.
And boy, can you. I just completed a house that was 5,300 square feet and a very striking modernist look to it. But we set out from the beginning to knowing this was a budget and how could we make it work on the least money. Ended up spending about $135 a square foot on a house that I need to take pictures of because it is striking. And I am certain it's going to be, it's worth completed, a definite premium over all of the money that they've spent on it.
Mm.
That's one end of the spectrum. And it's completely possible if you understand the materials and how to use them. The other end of the spectrum is, frankly, I may have worked on one of the most expensive modern houses in this area or ever, and that was $1,000 a square foot.
Wow.
For a 4,800 square foot house. And it was, I did it in conjunction with a guy who builds dream houses, or real, true fantasy houses all over the world. And the difference was that the cabinet allowance in the house is $500,000. And the cabinets were built in Italy. So you can spend ungodly amounts of money. For the most part, it isn't whether you're doing a modernist house or a traditional house.
Yes.
The basic house cost isn't very different. It is, what are the finishes? Frankly, if you're putting in a lot of glass, putting in a lot of traditional glass with muntins and in small pieces is far more expensive than putting in large expanses of glass. Unless, of course, you want the glass to all open up and slide out of the way.
Right.
Then you're talking real money.
Yes, you are.
And even then, I've done that and done it and gotten in under $200 a square foot, even doing the full glass walls to open up. So it's, you set your priorities and you set your budget target. And an architect is really your best friend. He's your only friend, your only ally in hitting your budget target and watching out for your money.
Well, if people are interested in seeing many examples of modernist houses, we have about 15,000 photos online of about 4,000 modernist houses around the country. The website is trianglemodernisthouses.com. And throughout the year, we run house tours in North Carolina. We take trips around the country to places like Falling Water by Frank Lloyd Wright and Allbrass in South Carolina. In the Raleigh area, we do architecture dinners called Appetite for Architecture and happy hours called Thirst for Architecture during the summertime. And then during the winter right now, we run a great movie series, which is in its fourth year, the Novels Architecture Movie Series in Raleigh, which brings in really visually stunning architecture films about homes and architects and other aspects of design. Last night we saw a series of original interviews with the family, the Kaufmans of Falling Water, the son who passed away.
Sorry, I missed that.
25 years ago. Had a great documentary on his life growing up as a young man.
Well, George, we're actually out of time.
Okay.
So that was a great wrap up, and thank you for being my guest.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thanks again for listening to Winning the Dream Home Race. Please join your host, Steve Klipp, again next Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll help you come one step closer to building or renovating your dream home.